Gospel music has a long history in the Midwest, especially in urban areas, Chicago, Detroit, Milwaukee, and it played a key role in the history of the civil rights movement. Our next guest is in Milwaukee today to share some of that history.
Robert Maravich is the founder and editor-in-chief of the Journal of Gospel Music, and he hosts Gospel Memories on Chicago's WLUW. His book, A City Called Heaven, Chicago and the Birth of Gospel Music, is due out next month. He'll be giving a talk at the UW-Milwaukee about the connection between gospel music and civil rights. That's today at 4:30 at UW-Milwaukee's Engelman Hall. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, gospel music has been called the soundtrack of the civil rights movement. So how closely were the music and the movement linked together?
Very much so. I mean, if you think about the spiritual, it was very much probably the original protest song, if you will. They had dual messages. So if you heard somebody singing Follow the Drinking Gourd, for example, it might also mean to follow the North Star, which was part of one of the dippers, and that would be the way to go north. So you have songs like, All God's Children Got Shoes, a spiritual said not everybody is going to heaven. And so you had these messages in the spirituals, and so it was sort of natural for them to be picked up and used in a way to express frustration with the way things were in the civil rights era as it was in the slavery era.
Well, a lot of gospel songs you think of in terms of redemption and freedom and talking about, being saved from the Pharaoh. Are there lots of things where there's a biblical meaning to it and then a very current day meaning all at the same time?
Absolutely. And in fact, whether you're talking about spirituals or the gospel songs of the 20th century written by people like Thomas A. Dorsey and Charles Tindley, they did have that sense that there was always a better day. I always like to say about gospel is that unlike the blues, where the blues has, it's a struggle, but there's not necessarily a solution, or if there is, perhaps it's not a socially acceptable solution. Where gospel, there was always a solution, whether it was getting me through today or that there will just simply be a better day in the future. And so how natural it was for these songs to be picked up and used, whether they were in church or whether in the march, and they were written that way. It was really written to speak to people who were cast away from society and give them a language to express their frustrations and to have hope for a better day.
Well, we definitely want to get listening to some music. Now, you shared some songs with us, and we're going to start off with a group called the Supreme Angels from Milwaukee. This is called Run to the Rock.
Tell me what you gonna do.
What you gonna do?
World's on fire.
What you gonna do?
What you gonna
do?
When Jesus comes.
What you gonna do?
Send a name.
What you gonna do?
What you gonna do?
What you gonna do?
Run to the rock.
Run to the rock.
No hiding place.
No hiding place.
Okay, Run to the Rock there from the Supreme Angels. Can you give us a little of the backstory behind the Supreme Angels?
Sure. Well, that was probably the most famous group to come out of Milwaukee. Howard Slim Hunt, who was one of the lead singers, came out of another group from Milwaukee. But these are migrants. And one of the things about gospel music is that much of the music came from people that came from the South during the Great Migration and settled in places like Milwaukee and Chicago and Detroit and brought their religion and music with them. And the Supreme Angels, they're still active today. Howard Hunt has passed on, and Sugar Hightower and some of the others, but there is a brand new group of Supreme Angels that are going to be putting out an album in about a month.
So you said gospel came to the Midwest via the Great Migration. Was this fertile ground for gospel to grow and expand here in the Midwest?
It was, in the sense of coming to the urban environments. What would happen is that as people came north from the Great Migration, they expected things to be better than they were in the South. Now, they were and they weren't. They just hit different types of segregation, unemployment, poor housing, and discrimination from within and without, not only from white communities, but some of the established black community. People did not necessarily like the southern ways of their brethren and felt that they were a little too country or a little uncouth and would, in their own way, discriminate against them. And so you had a people who felt like strangers in a strange land, and they turned to this music and really the gospel music community, the church community, to sort of have their own sense of being, their own sense of establishing themselves in the North. And so they also grabbed some of the urban music, the jazz, the blues, and incorporated that into their into the gospel, and that's kind of what created the, what became the 20th century sound of the African-American church.
So how did that music change as they came north and brought different traditions with them? Did it become sort of more inclusive of other traditions, as you were saying there, bringing in jazz?
Eventually it did. Initially, not so much, but as artists began to go between churches. So if a Baptist-bred quartet would sing in a Pentecostal church for a Pentecostal audience, they might pick up some of the Pentecostal styles, the improvisational tradition, or the extended musical components, and they would take that with them. And in fact, during what they call the gospel's golden era, but between 1945 and 1965, was the rise of the quartets. And you'll hear the quartets. They came from a very sort of Baptist background, Methodist, but they had learned so much from the Pentecostal and the spiritual and the holiness churches that the music of those quartets really embrace several denominations all at once.
I want to highlight another one of the tracks you sent our way. This next artist, I think, from Detroit, and this one directly linked to the civil rights movement. This is Will Hairston's March on to Montgomery.
Don't let Chef Jim Clark turn you around, turn you around, turn you around. Don't let Chef Jim Clark turn you around. March on to Montgomery.
And now here I hear some of the blues crossover you talked about, but I wonder, I mean, this is an era where we're seeing a lot of folk music taking up political protests throughout this time. Was there a lot of crossover there, too?
There was. In fact, you'll find a lot of the folk artists of the early 1960s were very much into gospel music. And some of the gospel artists started to hear the folk artists and incorporate into their own work. And somebody like Will Hairston, who eventually became a minister, he was one of the early ones to sort of build story songs around issues that were happening in civil rights. So there, talking about the march from Selma to Montgomery, he also did songs about Martin Luther King. He did an amazing tribute to Emmett Till and the death of Emmett Till. He did songs about Kennedy. He just wanted to tell the story in the old-fashioned ballad way, where he would take a current event and kind of turn it into a bluesy gospel song that had a message, generally speaking, that, you know, that the people who were evil were going to get their just desserts, and the good were going to triumph.
And we've got one more song we're going to listen to next. This is Chicago Staple Singers with Freedom Highway. You told us that this one recently got a CD release. What makes this album stand out to you?
It's in a couple of ways. One is this is a particular song, this Freedom Highway, is written by Pop Staples about the Selma to Montgomery march. But it was recorded in an African-American church on Chicago's South Side, a very prominent church, New Nazareth. And so you get a sense of this album of what it was like to be in a African-American church in the 1960s at the epitome of gospel, traditional gospel music, hearing the choir, hearing the audience or the congregation, and hearing, you know, an iconic group such as the Staple Singers just turn out a wonderful program. So much history right there in probably about 40 minutes of music.
And the lead into that one, I wouldn't have been surprised to hear that in a pop rock song of the era either. So there's some more crossover this time into the rock world.
Absolutely. In fact, there's a number of rock artists who would say that they were inspired. Somebody like Little Richard, who we often look at as a kind of a pioneer in rock and roll, learned so much of his own musical style from Marion Williams, who was a gospel singer with the Ward Singers and the Stars of Faith back in the 50s and 60s.
How much would you say that gospel has changed and also stayed true to its roots as we look back, you know, to the pinnacle, maybe back in the 60s, and also the Great Migration? What does it look like today?
Today, it's been very much influenced by the contemporary Christian music. I think you have the rise of megachurches that are multicultural, multi-denominational, and so you have a real rise in what is called praise and worship music. And so while the praise and worship music does draw on contemporary Christian music, what we might hear in, say, a white church, if you will, it still has these gospel components. And what I mean by that is some of the original rhythms, some of the vocal techniques, what they call melisma, which is sort of frills and flowers, worrying notes or improvising on it. That component is still very much present in the praise and worship music. But also the choir is back on the rise. The gospel choir, you're hearing more churches and mass choirs on the radio than you had in recent times. And so that sort of sense of the traditional gospel choir is making a resurgence, and I hope that continues.
Bob, thanks a lot for joining us, and enjoy your stay in Wisconsin.
Thank you very much for having me, and I want to say thanks to Judith Beal and the Religious Studies Program at UWM for having me. They're the great ones to convene this kind of session. I really appreciate it.
That was Robert Marovich, founder and editor-in-chief of the Journal of Gospel Music. He's speaking today at 4:30 in Milwaukee, and I believe the program includes some gospel music live there as well. It'll be at UW-Milwaukee's Engelman Hall.